It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here, Andy Iannocco, and of course, Alex Lindsay. We'll talk about the iPhone XS. It's been out for a while now, and people are starting to nitpick problems with charging, problems with wireless, and even problems with the camera. We'll even do a deep dive on what the iPhone camera is doing and how to get it to work better for you. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 630, recorded Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018. The squirrels aren't as sharp. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop, and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. And by IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career with flexible training and binge-worthy content from IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30 to get a free 7-day trial, 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by Tres Pontas, premium quality extra virgin olive oil shipped directly to you from the Casablanca Valley in Chile. Visit trespontas.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak, and you'll save 20% off every bottle of olive oil in your subscription. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple, and the Apple team is in place. Mac Break Weekly assemble from Montreal. I should give each of you like an Avenger name, you know.
Oh, I'm assembled, Leo. I'm assembled all over this show.
Renee Ritchie, imore.com.
Can I do the nanite thing like Tony Stark and just hit my chest and have the armor just leap out? I would love that. Oh, I'd love that
awesome.
So much.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I need it for the winter. It would be great.
Well, you see my Halloween costume.
Ooh.
Actually, I think I might have a little bit of it on on my blog. Oh, if you want to,
was it you in there? I saw something. Interesting.
I might have seen Lisa post something interesting.
That's me in there. Yeah, that's me in that real fine suit.
He got you.
You really want people to throw cantaloupes at you, don't you?
You think he's cute, and then he hits you with a lightning bolt, and it's not fun.
But that's the best darn $40 I ever spent. I gotta say, that was
only $40.
Is it like a sumo suit inside? Can you like wrestle in that thing?
It's got a fan. It's inflated.
Wow.
And actually, I read in the reviews, somebody said, can I wear this to work? And they said, well, you could.
On your last day, either because you know it's your last day or you know it's going to be your last day.
That's Andy Iannocco, formerly Chicago Sun-Times, now WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Wear our tote bags.
Yes. Get a free tote bag when you donate. And from the Pixel Core, Alex Lindsay in the house at Alex Lindsay, back from D.C.
Yep.
Nice to see you. For the moment. For the nonce. So here we are in week two of the iPhone XS. And as is often the case, there are a few little hitches, minor hitches.
Gotchas.
The big one right now is the charging issue, right? Somebody called it in the chat room charge gate. I don't think it's risen to the gate.
No, you got to gate everything, Leo. If you mispronounce a word, it's a gate.
I asked Jason Snell about this on iOS today earlier, and he said, Apple just figures you don't need to fast charge. It's an overnight thing. I don't know. Is that the case? What do we know about this?
So it was what happened was some people noticed that when they plugged in their new iPhone XS, it wouldn't charge if it was already in sleep mode. If they woke it up, it began to charge fine. If it was already awake, it began to charge fine. If they wirelessly were charging it, it was fine. But if it was off and they plugged it in, it just looked like it wouldn't start charging until they woke it up. And then people started to say, hey, this is happening to me on my newly updated iOS 12 iPhone or iPad. Videos were made, bodies were left strewn over Twitter. And then today, Apple pushed out the new update for, well, not the new update, the new beta for iOS 12.1, which addresses it. And they said they found in their testing that some phones just wouldn't engage the charging system, sometimes for long periods of time. The wake up would sort of wake them up and literally get them to engage immediately. And what the fix does is just make sure that the second you put that cable in, that charge system is engaged.
And then the other issue is that it doesn't seem to charge very quickly, certainly not with the little dongle that comes in the box.
No, the 5-watt.
Who uses the five water? But if you get the USB-C 29-watt charger, even then, it's not a super fast charge.
It'll charge it. So, I mean, Apple is still super conservative in some areas, and one of them is battery and power management. And you don't need to point to other vendors because every vendor has had issues with charging and with batteries over time. So what they do is that you'll find whole pages of scientists telling you why it is incredibly important to never charge wirelessly and never charge quickly because heat is the enemy of lithium ion, and you are just wasting away precious seconds, maybe minutes, of the lifespan of your battery over a 3-year period. Where I would argue, and I think many other people would argue, that for most people, the amount of convenience you get out of fast charging, even if it costs you like a week of battery life over 3 years, it's fine.
Yes.
It's much more important to charge quickly. So what Apple does is they will allow it to charge fairly quickly up to 50% and then shunt it back down to normal charging because they are sort of wary about the thermal damage that it can do if it's hot. And they also recommend that if you really want to charge fast, take it out of a case or anything like that because the more heat that generates, the more damage it causes. And they monitor more for the heat than they do for the charge level.
So these people are testing the 29-watt versus the whatever it is, 5-watt or 10-watt. They're looking at the over 100%, but really, if you looked at the first 50%, it would charge faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Significantly
That's
faster.
That's probably what you want. You want to plug it in. It's for when you like...
When you're down to 5% and you got to charge while you shave enough to get to the office and that's perfectly fine.
Exactly.
Most makers do something like that. I would love to see an engineer write a full book about all the problems we are not aware of to make a modern phone actually work. Among them being, here's how we charge a battery so that it doesn't destroy all the electronics in the case or kill
or
the battery within. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like. Yeah.
And I did.
It's amazing.
I admit I did have that issue with mine. Does this thing work?
You have the XS Max?
Max.
Max.
And I plugged it in, and I came back later, and I was like, hey, it didn't do anything. And so it was one of those things that I was like, well, I don't know what I did wrong. And I turned it on, plugged it in, and it started charging. So I didn't think about it until they started talking about it. But
you had the sleep problem.
Yeah, I had the sleep problem. I figured, oh, they'll fix it. It was one of those things, like, it became a big deal online, evidently, but I was like, oh, I'm sure they'll fix this in a dot one or they'll.
As they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like, but I think that overall, though, I don't ever have it go down very much because I think there's a culture within our company, at least, of having chargers everywhere.
Yeah. Yes.
So my phone has a charger. I've got a battery in my backpack. I've got things everywhere. And I needed it all until I finally took Facebook off my phone. I didn't leave Facebook. But I just took it off my phone. And it's like, suddenly my battery lasts forever. I was like, this is... It used to be I had to charge a couple times a day, and now I'm like...
Oh, you look at Facebook Messenger and the battery thing, and it'll say like 5 minutes on screen, 3 hours on background. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. There's a reason why both platforms now do a form of battery shaming, because both people at Apple and people at Google have both talked to me about how hard it is to convince developers collectively that we've given you some wonderful, simple rules to follow that will not kill the consumer's battery. And that's been like a huge, huge program they've been trying to enforce for the last 2 or 3 years. And the only thing that's working is making sure that the world knows, okay, guess what, Facebook? We're telling everybody who complains about our battery problem is going to say, well, delete Facebook. That's like having a 2-pound lead acid motorcycle battery.
I didn't do it for the battery.
Snapchat
I literally reached maximum Facebook last week with all the troubles that were happening in D.C.
I'm in the middle of it.
So everyone in the floor that I'm in, that's all they're talking about because they're all press, for the international press is all there. So that's all anyone's talking about. And then I go to Facebook and that's all anybody's talking about. I was like, okay, I need to stop somewhere. I can't.
Oh,
move.
There's one more thing we should point out. Some people still obsess over like charging it to 80%, then letting it discharge to 40%, and then never letting it get too high, never letting it get too low. Modern power management is really, really good. You don't have to do any of that anymore. You might, again, eke out a week extra battery life over 3 years if you do micromanage it. But if you think about all the time it takes you, the effort and stress to micromanage gadget, you deserve that week of your life back.
The other issue that's coming up a little bit, and I've seen a few stories about it, is problems with data, particularly Wi-Fi and cellular data. And Lisa's having this with her iPhone XS Max. Sometimes she'll have to reboot it a few times before she can really get online. Mine's not having any problems, but I'm seeing people complaining about that. What do we know about that issue?
They have gone 100% into Intel modem. So previously, I mean, Infineon was the original iPhone modem supplier, and then Apple switched to Qualcomm when they went to CDMA because, long story short, Qualcomm just owns CDMA and a lot of LTE. But Apple and Qualcomm and a lot of people have been having battles over really like the fairness of those patents and what is reasonable in terms of licensing fees. So Apple's been trying to move away from Qualcomm. They went halfway and switched all the GSM modems to Intel a couple of years ago, and this year they just switched all the modems to Intel. So if you've been using it on AT&T or on T-Mobile, most times in most places you'll be getting better reception than ever because they're up to gigabit LTE and they're doing 4x4 MIMO, multi-in, multi-out. But if you were used to Verizon and Sprint, you switched over to Intel, it has profoundly different characteristics. And for some people, some people say it's better. Some people say they are having problems connecting, their data is going down, especially in fringe areas where you have a very low signal. There's no attenuation or detuning like an iPhone 4 days. Like you can't just put your finger on that new antenna thing and pause and resume your network connection. But people they're dropping down to 3G or they're having other problems. And my guess is similarly, we'll see a carrier update or one of the 12.0 or 12.1 updates will fine-tune it now that they're collecting a ton of data from a ton of people.
I've noticed that mine is having more breakup with my AirPods. You know, like it's an odd, you hear this like stereo fall apart, and literally the phone's like in my pocket. And I'm just hearing this every once in a while, you hear this like degradation in the AirPod that I didn't have a week ago, you know, with my other.
It switched to Bluetooth 5, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think that shouldn't cause a problem.
Are we getting new AirPods, by the way? I thought we were good. Weren't we supposed to have new AirPods this year?
I think we were supposed to have them at that event, and I think circumstances conspired so that we're not having them for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm wondering if they're going to break apart the Qi charging phone case from now the AirPad, because I haven't heard anything about how the actual, wireless charging AirPod case is hung up. And it seems like something that they want to get on. And it seems like the sort of thing where if they release it any time before December 20th and have them in stores, they're going to have a very, very happy time with it. It'll be not just money for them, but it'll also be a good thing to remind people that these things exist and that we're actually upgrading them. At this point, I'd be a little bit not wary, but if I could hold off on buying AirPods until, let's say, January, I would want to do that because I would want to see what they do, not just with wireless charging, but to see if they've got a new battery design or something else that's going to make it worth my while to wait.
I think spring was the last I heard, and it's part of getting them with the new AirPods that have the sweat/water resistance and the onboard Siri parsing and stuff like that.
Not this month during an iPad announcement.
I mean, never say never, and they could always show them off or something, but the last, I think, the rumors were springish.
Spring. Are they going to kill the wireless charger?
Everyone thought they were, and then, you know, good old Guy Rambo found strings for it in iOS 12.1. So
wow.
I'll expect it when I see it. It's Gandalf to me now.
I think I go about 60-40 in favor. Only I don't think they will cancel it outright, but I think there's a possibility that the amount of time they've put into it has led them to basically take version 2, what was going to be version 2 of this product, and make it version 1. So it might be that they might have to sort of announce something that's kind of supersedes it, either just internal, if not externally, at least internally. It's a very weird situation. But when I have conversations with people who let me at least talk about this stuff on background, it is the weirdest product cycle I have ever heard of in terms of optimist being dead certain about something as they're developing it, and then being dead certain of nothing at certain points during the process.
One of the interesting things that we could also talk about the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth and the cellular is that there is so many iPhones now and so many people using them with so many accessories that it seems like every time there's an update, like 1% of people get much better in performance, 99% are fine, and 98% are fine, and 1% get worse performance. And it's like a butterfly effect of reasons why. And you could go from being being super upset to being super happy, or being super fine to being super upset. And I don't know if that's just a question of scale and diversity in the ecosystem, but I think it's something that as soon as you tap one of them out, it seems like one other little thing comes up.
And all I can say is the people who are super upset, it's very unlikely they've ever actually developed a product of their own.
That's absolutely true. But I mean, these are the problems that you have to deal with when you're selling a $1,000 phone. Let me finish my thought. I'm just saying that I bought $90 phones. I have a $90 phone that's in regular rotation that I absolutely love, and I'm willing to forgive a whole bunch of stuff about it because it's a $90 phone. $1,000, you don't want to find out, gee, why is my Wi-Fi like cutting out? And instead of working fine, instead of my $300 phone from 3 years ago, and then go online and see some of the less responsible people writing AntennaGate 4, Volume 4. Apple refuses to confirm problems, Wi-Fi problems, and new release of iPhone XS. So I always tell people who have complaints, often legitimate complaints, in the first couple of weeks, realize that this is not just a toaster where you plug it in and it works in the pre-IoT era. It's interaction between the software, the firmware, the baseband, the hardware, and then the whole network it's working on, plus the base station that's connecting to. It really does. I do think that almost every major release of hardware, iPhones included, get much, much better after a month, only because there's a whole bunch of fine tuning happening behind the scenes at Apple and outside of Apple that we can't see.
And I think that definitely people should discuss it. But when people are like you see online, people are just like, this is unacceptable, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you definitely don't work in product development. Also, you know, because you just understand that there's a fog of war. You're putting this stuff together. Yeah. You're doing the best you can. And when you have a sample that's this small, that's super quiet, and it can only be very, a certain size because you don't want everyone to know about it. So it's a tiny sample, and then you greatly increase that sample, and a whole bunch of other stuff comes out. And that's what, as you said, that's what the first month or two, then they kind of tamp all that down, and then we all forget about it until the next
year. I feel like you have to judge them based on how they react to it. Like, every company has launch day issues, and it's how those companies react to them, the speed and candor and all those things that you have to judge them by.
Absolutely. That's why it's such a good thing when Apple, over the past couple of years particularly, they've been better at making a public acknowledgement, at least not tear their shirt open or put something on the website, but simply when someone complains about something and gets a response back that wasn't an automatic bounce back saying, we're looking at this problem and we're taking it seriously, that will give people about 2 to 3 weeks worth of, okay, we'll wait and see what happens. And then Apple usually has a patch for something, or at least they rethink how they tuned the camera or how they tuned an antenna earlier. It's in the old days when you're like, okay, this is going to be one of those things where you deny that I've been seeing the actual antenna signal strength go from 5 to 1, and then after about a month when you have to deal with it, you tell me it's my fault for holding it wrong, is it?
Yeah. No, I actually have the cellular signal thing turned on and I can watch it.
Yeah.
What about the 10R? When can we order that?
Was it the 21st? I think they said.
And it comes out the 26th, right?
Yeah.
So we're not that far off. I mean, we're a few weeks off from that. Do we know anything about that at all? Is that have they sent out? Okay, you probably can't answer this. Just nod if you, how could we phrase this? If they had a 10R sent out to people, you think somebody might have one?
It would typically be too early for that kind of stuff. And also historically Apple, when it's not at the event, they've done briefings like anywhere from a week to like the night before the launch. Oh, so it's really hard to tell.
Okay. This seems like the sort of thing where they'll have a hotel in New York and a hotel in Chicago, and they'll have their days of briefing. They can do that anytime. They don't need to have a separate thing.
And also their strategy is so different out there. There could be a bunch of YouTube videos already being made. Who knows?
Yeah,
now, right.
No, like, that's,
yeah, we don't
that's
know.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, I should ask Marquez Brownlee is what you're saying.
Well, what's amazing is that the bloggers are feeling about the YouTubers now the way the magazine people felt about the bloggers 10 years ago. You know, it's not like nobody ever learned from those things.
Yeah,
it's something that bears repeating that when you see journalists, and I will use the broadest term possible because everybody who has a good point of view and is honest is somewhere on the journalism spectrum. It's not, whereas maybe 10 or 15 years ago, there used to be this mystique about, ooh, this person got loner, ooh, this person got, ooh, this person. Realize that every single time they have a certain number of these pieces of hardware allotted, and they decide, every time they're going to decide, what do we want to achieve with the 2 days before release day coverage? And they want to try to manage that a little bit. So that's why it's important to notice, like, if someone with a disability blog, for instance, gets one early, that's an important thing to take note of, because that means that they don't think that they want that person's audience specifically to hear about this. They know that this person is going to write about focus on areas of the performance that someone like me is not going to focus on. So that's why there was a year ago or a couple of years ago that someone someone did a chart of, like, the timeline of people getting early hardware, and like a two-way chart of hardware releases and, like, pundits and who got ones early and who didn't, trying to prop some sort of a vector about something about, I don't know, whether it was about access journalism or about being on some sort of special list or whatever. And you look at that and say, no, that's because the big deal about this release was super, super, super new camera. So they don't really want the person who is super, super good at networking, if they got 10 pieces of hardware, to not just 10 pieces of hardware, but 10 hour-long briefings and 10 people who are going to be on 24-hour standby for questions. Let's make sure it's the people who are going to cover look at the parts of it that we really, really want people to know about.
What's the timing? What's the timing of the 10R and the iPad Pro announcement? Will there be an iPad Pro announcement?
Yeah, I think the 10R will be just before it.
Just before it. Okay.
Yeah.
It won't be an event.
It won't be an reviews. Event. They'll just.
There was this. It was this great Apple. This guy was working at Apple, then left Apple briefly, then went back to Apple. And he had the best description I've ever heard of a relationship with Apple to people outside Apple. And that was just animal husbandry. it's entirely what you can do. Like, Apple's there. And how does this help Apple?
Yeah.
And if, like, John Hamm reviewed the iPhone XS, I forget what magazine it was in, but it was literally the Apple Watch Series 4. Sorry.
The star John of Hamm Mad Men.
Yeah, the star of Mad Men was reviewing it for a magazine, and they know that John Hamm or Christy Brinkley is going to bring them millions more audience than someone like me, frankly.
Yeah, not just millions more, but again, who are they not reaching? That will get a fashion. When the Apple Watch came out, they reached out to a lot of fashion bloggers because they don't. Again, look at me. I'm wearing like a 10-year-old. I'm wearing the T-shirt that I slept in, throwing a V-neck sweater over because I think it'll class it up. I'm not the person that you want, like, on a YouTube video and say, "Hey, dudes, I got this new watch. It looks really. It's $10,000, but yeah."
But Beyonce in the pure gold watch that sells.
Yeah. I wonder where that watch is today.
I was gonna say what's his name? Kanye did something unspeakable with it. But.
That was a Series Zero, so it makes it completely useless. You can't even
upgrade. They're hard to find, though. I keep looking for them, and, like, it's really hard to find people who are partying with those. I think they've just been kept as collector's items, or just for the gold value, or something.
Sure.
Or they just don't know where they are. It's like until they finally pull the drawers out of the dresser, saying, "Oh, that's right. I did buy one of those watches. I stopped wearing it after a month because."
Sharon, where's so that gold,
they need a gold
watch?
This year, because this was the first year the original gold couldn't update to the new watchOS, so they needed a new gold.
How much is the Hermes? I was saying they didn't make a premium version of the Series 4, but there is an Hermes version. How much is that? Is that a lot?
Like $1,500.
Okay, so yeah, you can still spend money if you really, for some reason, really want to.
And there's, again, I keep saying this, but, like, I go to the Hermes store every time I pass by SFO, and it's like their bands are twice as expensive as the Hermes bands for Apple Watch. So if you're a devout Hermesitian, Hermes, people get upset.
Hermesitian,
you can go there and get a discount Apple Watch band.
I remember going into the Hermes store in Paris. It was quite an experience. But that was back when it was just selling scarves. Let's take a little break, and we will come back with my little friends. Say hello to my little Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. Mr. Rene Ritchie, say hello to my little friend from iMore.com.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Comment ça va?
Ça va bien.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, by the way, for all the Quebecois friends I have on Pokemon Go. I realize that at least half of my Pokemon Go friends are from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, we're having a bunch of fun today because we had an election yesterday and a new party took over, brand new party, and their initials are CAQ, and you can't say it out loud without Americans laughing at you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He said
everyone's 12
CAQ.
Years old.
And wait till the president gets a hold of that one.
Oh no! Oh God!
It's all off.
I think the president has had a hold of that since inauguration day.
Oh, and that's Andy Yanatko, from WGBH. Liberal Radio, Boston.
Don't get high on your own supply, Leo.
Our show today brought to you by Slack. This is the way we communicate. Slack, where work happens. It's a collaboration hub for work. Whatever work you do with Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop. The information they need is always at their fingertips. I am so happy. You know, we used HipChat for a while, and HipChat got merged with Slack. So we jumped on the Slack wagon. And we're very happy. Here's our twit.tv Slack channel. Just to prove I'm not making it up, we've got channels for all the shows. Conversations going on. Look, Megan Maroney sent a little animated GIF to you, Karsten. And it's all fun and games on Slack, except work's getting done too. And the nice thing about Slack is it's better than email. It's more immediate. It's faster than email. But they have a lot of nice features that also make it friendly to you as a user. For instance, the ability to say, hey, I'm going to be offline. I don't work in the evenings, that kind of thing. Just really is awesome. You can keep track of all your messages going back in time. So, you know, if there's any questions arise, you've got it all. And by the way, one of the reasons we're happy to go with Slack is all the integrations. Slack is integrated for us with all of the devices and the things like Panopta and Atlassian and all the stuff we use, so that it's part of our workflow. It's a partner with us. No more searching for emails for follow-ups, searching through multiple systems to find what you're looking for. No more multiple tabs and platforms to keep updated. If you use Salesforce, Zendesk, Google Drive, Jira, they all integrate. In fact, 1,000 apps integrate with Slack. With mobile apps for iOS and Android, they sync as well. You can always pick up where you left off, no matter where you are. And your data is 100% encrypted and secure. With Slack, your team is better connected. I know ours is. Slack.com. Slack.com. Check it out. Where work happens. Say again?
I'm always amazed that, like, after since we got into Slack years ago, and I'm like I can't believe I'm running a whole company on my phone.
On your phone,
you know, you just sit there and you're following up with everything, kind of managing it all. Yeah.
It's awesome. The Coalition Futur Québec.
CAC. Quebec is now run by the CAC.
The CAC.
Yeah.
ITC judge. Speaking of internationalism, the International Trade Commission judge, which is, despite its name, a U.S. trade organization.
Like the World Series, Leo. It's fun.
Yeah, we own it all. declined to block the importation of iPhones with Intel chips, even though he said that Apple's phones do infringe one of Qualcomm's patents. Qualcomm had asked the judge to block iPhone importation in the United States. He said that, quote, the judge said, quote, public interest factors weigh against granting Qualcomm's request for a ban. It will be reviewed by other judges. Apple said in a statement that Qualcomm unfairly demanded royalties for technologies it had nothing to do with. We're glad the ITC stopped Qualcomm's attempt to damage competition and ultimately harm innovators and U.S. consumers.
And to kick dogs and burn down trees.
Yes.
Well, I wonder how much... maybe Qualcomm's going to come out with this, but I was like, it's cost them. When Apple deciding they don't want to play anymore with Qualcomm has got to be costing more than any damages they're going to get from Apple. You know, it is,
I think,
billions of dollars.
Sometimes these things become principal more than money.
Well, that's a lot of money to be.
I think it's core to Qualcomm's business, though. I mean, they're not a chip company. They make chips, but they are a patent licensing company. Right. And it's not just Apple. Like, there have been governments who've gone after them, Taiwan, Korea, the EU, over some of their deals. And there's, like, Huawei, I think there's at least two companies that are suing them. They keep the second company's name out of the headlines. But speculation is it's Huawei, and there might be more. And Qualcomm has been getting a percentage of the retail. I think it's like 5% of the retail cost of the device. They don't just want money for their technology. They want a piece of the action. And that doesn't scale. And as you know, they argue that the modem is so important, but there's so many important objects in a phone these days. And I think they're afraid that if Apple breaks through the way Apple broke through with the carriers, their entire business is going to go. You know, that was a really great business, a super happy business for Qualcomm. And I think they're afraid that those sort of glory days will be over if they don't hold on to this as tightly as possible.
Couldn't you argue, though, that Apple, in getting rid of Qualcomm chips and choosing Intel chips, has chosen something, at least for the time being, something that's technologically inferior? Those Intel modems are a lot slower.
The problem is that Qualcomm's product is having done such a good job on modems that if you put their code and their technology in your phone, you're not going to have to worry about where this person decides to carry it or where you decide to sell it. And that's the value of their company. That part of it is acquiring patents, but a lot of it is making sure that's all integrated into the system to make sure that, once again, you don't have a VHS versus beta versus whatever that other third videotape format was in Great Britain that I only found out about because Tecmo did a wonderful video about it. They do add value, but the problem is that they're running into the Band-Aid situation where they have a product now that is too important, and also they've been doing too good a job protecting it, such that the argument can now be made that the world can't really continue if Qualcomm has the ability to ice an entire phone platform. So for everything that Apple said, they still got a judgment handed against them saying that, yes, you are infringing on Qualcomm's patents. But it was more dire for Qualcomm because the judge pretty much said to every phone maker, go ahead, infringe Qualcomm's patents all you want. The worst that's going to happen is that we'll ask you to write Qualcomm a check. We are not going to ask you to stop making that phone.
Which they were happy to do before. They just didn't want to write as big a check as they were.
Well, and that was Qualcomm's reaction. They said it makes no sense if you find patent infringement, as the judge did, to then allow infringement to continue by denying an import ban. This is Qualcomm General Counsel Don Rosenberg. That goes against the ITC mandate to protect American innovators by blocking the import of infringing products.
It's so crazy that Samsung, who makes their own Exynos processor, ends up shipping Qualcomm processors in half their phones just because Qualcomm is such a giant pain in the derriere to deal with.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
I really think it's the same.
I like my 840, my Snapdragon 845.
I know, but as
5G comes along, this is going to be an even bigger issue.
Samsung could be integrated all the way to the silicon the way Apple is, but they can't because they don't know which processor your phone is going to happen to run.
Right. Well, I wonder if they're going to be emboldened by this decision, and they might say,
"I hope so."
They could, but this is a problem that it extends way beyond this one platform or this one lawsuit. It's a problem that Google is now facing, where unfortunately they did such a great job building their search engine that although they're all alternatives, it's hard to imagine another company building a product that's so good that takes so many years to steep in the crock pot. But to get get that kind of quality and really being the number one go-to choice for search anymore. So then you have a problem of, well, if you have, because of your own success, whether it was through skullduggery or not, if you have created what has stopped being a product and started being part of infrastructure, do you now have responsibilities to make that infrastructure as wide as wide as possible? So there are some. I believe that there are. I had a lawyer explain this to me 2 months ago, so I'm going to speak as though this is just something I saw as graffiti on a wall somewhere. But there is the equivalent of like an eminent domain sort of thing, which is not supposed to be used indiscriminately, but it is possible to simply say, sorry, I know that you did this really, really great job inventing this way of putting signals across copper wire, But now that everybody uses that for everything, we're going to have to basically buy your patent for you and make it impossible for you to continue to make money off of this, because we can't start. We can't. You're engaging in practices that make it impossible for someone to get service in a place that's not profitable to get service from. But that's the way that we get people to call 911. So we are not giving you the option of not running a profitable company. So we have to take some of your IP from you.
Another company is not too happy is Intel, which in a blog post said Qualcomm has publicly disparaged Intel's products as inferior. Well, okay, maybe okay. They are. He didn't defend that. He said it's easy to say things, but Intel's track record is clear. Every day we push the boundaries of computing and communication technologies, and the proof is in the pudding. Last year, the U.S. Patent Office awarded more patents to Intel than to Qualcomm. Okay, but
The size of their patents. I mean, like, this happens in every industry. Google had to use LG displays in the Pixel because there weren't enough Samsung panels. Right. And Apple and Google are investing billions of dollars to make LG make better OLED panels because the world actually needs more OLED panels.
Right.
But that's a good thing. If you're shut out of the fact that Qualcomm is being such jerks means that Intel now has an opening. If the first page of their marketing brochure is now to deal with us, we're not as good as Qualcomm, but we're not jerks to work with, and we're solving these problems. That will give you diversity, just like DuckDuckGo is such a great alternative to Google because of the things that are annoying about using the Google search product.
Well, and I think that one of the things, I mean, this is the bigger question about patents at some point is the original, my understanding at least, the original idea behind a patent was that the inventor was given a certain amount of time to make money with that patent, and then it was put into the public, in domain. But the idea was to give someone the chance to make it themselves, not to...
Right.
So that they get some time.
You get
to do that.
12 years or whatever it is, whatever the term is these days, to reap the benefits. But then, because you patented it, the process is put into the public domain. Everybody understands how it works.
And this is slightly different because these are technologies that everybody need. If they pick your patent to be part of the standard for that technology, everybody has to be able to apply to that standard. So you're supposed to do reasonable access, non-discriminatory access to it. And that's where I think the argument is. Apple says they have to pay Qualcomm money. Qualcomm says Apple has to pay them money. Apple is saying Qualcomm is asking for an unreasonable amount of money.
Right. That's basically, you boil it all down. Yeah.
And it's going to go back and forth in the courts.
Back and forth, it all boils down to that.
And I think part of the reason they're not stopping shipments is because the judge knows this is going to go back and, we're going to go through like six more appeals. But
Apple's withholding billions. I mean, that hurts Qualcomm badly. So I think they have every incentive to fight this hard.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of patents, Apple has won on an appeal. Apple had lost a court battle with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They'd filed suit in 2014 saying that several iPhone and iPad processors used technology that was developed at the University of Wisconsin. A jury gave them an award of... I think $234 million and then another $272 million added to that fine. So it was more than half $1 billion at risk. A judge, a federal appeals court, has now overturned that court ruling, saying, well, no, Apple didn't infringe. And this is the standard you need to overturn. No reasonable juror could have found infringement, effectively saying that jury was wrong. So Apple's happy. They have appealed a fairly hefty patent dispute and won.
Meanwhile, the FaceTime one, I think, is still going on in the Rocket docket. I mean, like, you win some, you lose some.
I understand the need for this, and it's a shame that so much energy gets put into it and so much money and so much innovation is stymied.
It's the non-practicing. Like, if a company or an inventor is doing something amazing with technology, but it's a lot of the companies that amass vast amount of patents and then apply them in very, like, this is a fax machine patent, but we're going to stop you from using FaceTime.
Yeah, that's terrible. Although I think the University of Wisconsin patent is because of something that was actually invented at the University of Wisconsin.
Well, and what happens with a lot of these, with a lot of the educational institutions is, you're spending a lot of time coming up with new ideas, working on stuff that people haven't, especially in a university, you can work on things that don't have commercial viability yet. And one of the ways that you underwrite some of that work is that you do either provisional patenting for the next year, or you do, or file a provisional application, or you actually do the patent. And that you hope that some of those things come back. And some universities, especially California state universities have made a lot of money.
Stanford has, Google money because Google was invented at Stanford. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of money that goes back into these universities that I don't know if the students get any benefit from that, but the organization is able to build some more shiny buildings.
Hey,
basketball team still cannot accept a free candy bar though.
Exactly.
We talked last week, I think, or maybe the week before. Megan Maroney was at the Apple store up here in Santa Rosa when it was robbed. Yeah. There's a second theft there. They've been robberies all over California. Warrants for 17 people were issued. Arrests have already started today for a ring of people who had robbed Apple stores in 19 counties. More than $1 million worth of Apple goods were stolen. The robbers were known for wearing hoodies and storming in large groups to snap up products on display in a matter of seconds. That's what happened in the Santa Rosa store. Seven of those involved. There are 17 warrants, but seven of those involved have already been arrested.
Seems like there's a bunch of cameras there. There's a bunch of stuff there. Like, how do you think that's actually going to turn out? Like,
it's a very smart play because most stores, I think Apple store included, the staff has said, if someone is trying to steal product, let them steal. And they clearly are interested in getting in and getting out fast. Let them get in and get out fast.
Oh well, sure.
That's
true in a bank too. You're never told. I remember when I worked at a record store, they said, if somebody steals a record, that's okay. Yeah. Let them walk out. Yeah. Don't risk your life.
And there's a thriving market for parts. So the fact that these things are all device managed and probably are going to be on full lockdown the moment they leave the store, that's okay because they're just going to be taken apart and parted out anyway. The fact is, it wouldn't happen if it weren't a good business decision. These are not, you're not looking at like crackheads that are just doing stupid crimes.
It's a good business decision. I'm really just saying.
Eight of them are in jail. Nine of them still at large, but probably are going to be in jail. I don't know how good a business decision this was.
It wouldn't be widespread if there wasn't a big upside. If it wasn't an easy thing
I'm
to
sure
do.
There's an upside. Yeah.
There's an upside for the guy who probably won't get caught, who they didn't even know who it was, who they supplied the parts to.
Elliot Gould. He's going to get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so much for the guys going into the store. That's not a good business model for them.
I don't know if anybody got that reference, but
I got that.
You got it. Apple is being accused of unsavory business practices in a Memoji trademark lawsuit.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Lawsuit filed on Thursday alleges Apple snaked the Memoji trademark from an Android app of the same name through a series of questionable behind-the-scenes moves, one of which allegedly involved the creation of a single-purpose LLC.
By the way, that is done all the time by every major company. Yeah. You don't want to negotiate as Apple because someone's going to go, wow, this is my payday. And so all these companies will build a LLC somewhere to negotiate a transfer of IP. That's super, super common.
The company that made the Memoji, which, by the way, did the same thing, basically, for Android, had filed a trademark application, but before the registration was obtained, Apple made a play for its version of the name. They filed in April 2016. Apple created a subsidiary called Memo Fun Apps LLC to obtain.
Wonder who the CEO of that was.
I wonder how many meetings they had inside of Apple to decide on what name to choose because it had to be the perfect name.
Well, the funny thing is, a deal was apparently reached, so they were able to buy the rights to this trademark from the owners. The deal was reached June 4th, 2018, a day you might remember. It's the day Memojis were announced at the Worldwide Developer Conference.
I mean, Cisco owned the iPhone trademark the day Steve Jobs announced it, so Apple's hardly been on trademark.
No, this is normal. I think this is business as usual.
Yeah.
Social Tech, the owners of it, said an unknown person inquired about buying the rights in May, just 2 weeks prior to Apple's Memoji debut. He was told the Memoji name is not for sale. Anyway, this is in court. That's where you go when you have a dispute like this.
Better than getting fights in the barn.
Yeah.
There's this is true. There's a lot of that going around. I've seen a lot of that in like at smaller stakes where people do a form of insider trading where they know they work for a very, very large company and they know that they're trying to decide between these 11 names. And so they decide that what if we were to register this or what if I were to tell my cousin, the lawyer, to create a company and register this as a trademark before they decide, before they get that, they might be able to, for $18,000 for the startup cost, they might be able to get like a $50,000 oh, go away slap a settlement. So, yeah, this stuff is crazy. The weakness, though, is that people don't realize that unless you're chasing after Apple money, the likelihood that someone will just make up a different name and say, well, if you try to float them from $5,000 to like $30,000 and someone says, well, the difference between $5,000 and $30,000 is us just simply calling our new web processor Gamonsk. we're not gonna, you have a great name, but well, our software is better than the name.
If you've tried to acquire a domain name, we've tried to acquire domain names for Twit. And we don't want to come in as Twit because we're afraid people will hold us up. Yeah, so right. You don't come in as Twit. You get somebody else.
And the alternative is like we have Apple Wallet and Google Wallet and Microsoft Wallet, a bunch of just bland generics that nobody really cares about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is kind of tragic because you see, what breaks my heart is when you see these people who are like kind of chiselers, where it's like, hey, this domain name is Park. It's not making money for anybody. It's not
all the time.
It's not doing anything productive. And I have a cool idea for something that I want to do, and it's actually going to be used, and it's perfect for this application, and I'm willing to give you a fair amount of money for it. And so, our counter offer is $30,000, and you have to come back and say, I've offered you $5,000. That is literally my top, and you now have the choice between getting $5,000 for this domain or nothing for another 8 years. And it's amazing how many companies will just say no. That's our final offer, thinking that my lightbulb storefront.net is going to be the next name of Pixar's next big movie, and that's who you're really dealing with, and you really got to hold them up by the. It's like, oh man. And that's why really good domain names go to this site. Yep. This domain name is for sale. That annoys me.
Leo.com. Can't get it.
Still waiting on it.
Still waiting on it. Hey, I didn't know this.
I've had so many offers for CWOB.com just because it's a four-letter domain.
Really?
And not because people have any need for it. It's just that they want they feel as though because this is an old domain, maybe someone's forgotten about it and they can just offer somebody $500 for it and get it. And I'm like, okay, it's not. If you're willing to like vest 20% of my retirement fund with an offer, okay, I'll listen. But it's like,
I didn't know this. Final Cut Pro 10 did not have official eGPU support until Mojave came out.
Yep.
As an eGPU owner, I'm glad to see there's now a checkbox.
One thing I have noticed is it feels like Final Cut to some degree, but Compressor to a huge degree is much slower in Mojave.
So,
is it?
I'm assuming that we're going to get some kind of update. Ooh. It feels like it's not using the extra instance of the processor, but it is, and I'm not sure if I'm, you know, like I'm just used to things going at a certain multiplier, and it is what I expect to happen in minutes is happening in sometimes... Hmm. Almost an hour. Hmm. Something's off. You know,
I'm still on High Sierra on my Final Cut Pro machine.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to change my lap based on my experience with my laptop. I don't think I'm going to jump to Mojave for a Final Cut thing just quite yet. If I'm using compressor a lot, if you're using compressor a lot, which I do like a lot as far from a compression perspective,
but I'm not at that level yet.
Something feels a bit
I'm
off.
At the share button level, Andy. I'm not at the Alex Lindsay compressor level yet.
Yeah.
Great article on the Halide blog. We love Halide. It's a third-party camera for Apple iPhones.
As just a little bit of background here, Sebastian DeWitt, who's a designer who wrote this, he was the one in charge of doing stitched leather from Steve Jobs' airplane for Find My Friends at Apple. And as the designer of Double Twist, was the first person, I believe, to anti-alias Pentile displays. So he knows of which he speaks.
Wow. And he's the designer of Halide. Has a great article on what's new in the iPhone XS camera, but specifically addresses this issue about the soft filter on the selfies. He says it doesn't exist. I don't want to say that some people make up controversies to get YouTube impressions, but you do have to take things on the internet with a grain of salt. Now, no one's denying that there is some smoothing going on, enhancing yes. going on.
But it's just not a beauty filter, and some people hope that if it was, Apple could give you an on-off button. But since it is not, they cannot give you an on-off
button. It's part of the software. Is it doing the same thing on the front-facing camera as it's doing on
the
back?
So there's a couple of things that work there. He explains it really well. You know, Matthew Panzerino had a series of tweets that also explained it really well. And my understanding after speaking to Apple a little bit about it is that they have a completely new imaging pipeline everywhere from the sensor through the silicon and through everything that gets adjusted before they present to you the image. And it's doing a lot of very complicated things. One of the things is its new HDR does get so much more detail in the highlights and so much more detail in the shadows that there's less difference in the edges, which is something that traditionally you'd use to sharpen an image, is to create greater contrast in the darks and lights right at the edges of objects. It also got rid of a ton of the noise, which people often thought was texture in the skin, and the banding, which gave it a lot of sort of a gritty realism to it. But it didn't. What Apple's done with some other things like rope and brick and clouds is to purposefully use AI to maintain a texture and to protect it even against compression artifacts. And they're not doing that with skin. I think that's a lot of what we're seeing is because they're shooting so fast, both the ISO and just the speed of the shutter, they're just shooting everything so fast. It's got massive amounts of noise. They're reducing that amount of noise to compensate, and they're not retexturing it. So it ends up looking like this buttery smooth.
Here's an example. The two photos on the left are with the iPhone 10. These are both raw. And the two on the right with iPhone 10S. And you can see a lot more noise in the 10S image. That's raw, though, because by the time you see it, the noise has been processed out.
Yeah. It's merged four frames plus four frames of HDR plus a long exposure plus image and all sorts of other processing.
We used to when we were working on matte paintings in a movie company I used to work for, one of the things that you would do is you'd run the camera a little longer. This is when we actually had film, and you would get, let's say, 10 frames of a couple seconds. You just grab 10 frames, and you'd have one be 100%. The bottom one would be 100%, and then the next one would be 50, and then 25, and then 12.5, and 6.25. And what it would do is it would basically average out everything that that was different about the image. You're theoretically, it's the same image that you're looking at. You couldn't do it with people moving. It was just something that you did when everything's still, but it would get rid of all the grain. And that way you could add stuff to it and then add the grain back on top of it, and then it would look like it was all part of the same thing, and you wouldn't have grain building up. The thing that I think, my theory looking at this, is that Apple's taking a whole bunch of photos, and they're taking them at very high speed, which means it's going to be grainier, there's going to be more errata in the chip. But at the same time, it's moving just ever so slightly because you're not, as a person, not completely still. And so as it averages those out, some of those fine details, which I'm sure they're still pulling back in, but some of those fine details are changing just a little bit and are getting averaged out, which gives it kind of a very smooth texture. They're grabbing the major things, but not grabbing the smaller things, because then you'd get all kinds of weird errata. Yeah. But I think that might be part of the process just based on the stuff we used to do.
Yeah, it's important for everybody to understand that there's sharpness and then there's perceived sharpness. And that's what this blog post is a really good job of explaining. The number of times I've been disappointed with a camera I've just bought because, wow, one of the reasons why I bought it was because I went on Flickr and looked for other pictures taken with this camera. And why are the pictures I'm getting not that sharp? Well, because you went into Photoshop or even went into the Photos app and just simply slid something to the left to say, please make this look sharper. It really is about localized contrast. It's not about sharpness. It's about how much you notice the sharpness. That said, it really is a hugely valuable blog post. It's explaining a lot of not just about the XS, but about how the eye perceives sharpness, how the eye perceives detail, and how pretty much every camera tries to make a pleasant picture. All that said, it's a binary reaction. Either you think a photo looks good or it doesn't, and it doesn't matter whether it came out of a $5,000 camera with a $3,000 lens with $10,000 with a lighting, or it came out of a phone camera. If people are consistently saying that I don't like how faces look in this camera, Apple is going to address that. And it's it is deeply integrated in the pipeline, as Renee said, but they can still put something downstream, because remember that every JPEG is like the prints that old people above the age of 28 used to pick up from the drugstore. The negative is the data that comes off the chip. And the JPEG is just simply the decision made by the image processor about what that should look like. So it'll be okay. One thing that I've been really excited about, the silly details of the way that the XS takes pictures, is that now, because they're trying to burst so many frames into one combined image, they're using a higher shutter speed. So it's a faster shutter speed. One of the problems consistently of the iPhone, to my point of view, has been that Apple has been concerned about introducing image noise, which is what happens when you make the chip. You put more power through the chip and you make it more light sensitive. But the problem is that when you have something that's in motion of any kind, that's the difference between like a super super sharp picture of a squirrel, or which is what I usually get out of a Google phone or a Samsung phone, and one that fine for Instagram. But you can see if you look closely that the eyes are not quite as sharp as they could be. And I have no kids. I also don't own like a small yappy dog. So that's why I take pictures of squirrels. But if you have a kid, or if you have a small yappy dog, you realize that that's going to be something very, very important.
There's something that's really interesting to me is that and everyone will admit that this is subjective. There is absolutely an element of science to this, but there's absolutely an element of art to it. And Panzerino in his tweet said that he would much rather have this detail. And then to exactly what Andy said, he can slide that sharpness slider as much as he wants, but he can't recover any detail that's lost by pre-sharpening the image before they give it to him. Where Nilay Patel from The Verge had a delightful tweet where he's like, I will admit that all the details in there, but your eye can't see it, is among the most delightful existential ways to evaluate a camera's quality I've ever heard in some time. So you have people who spend all their days with these cameras arguing about it. So you're allowed not to like it, and you're allowed to complain bitterly if you want it to change. And I encourage you, please, because I'm not a fan of what the selfies look like. So I encourage you, please complain.
Is it only with the phone software that it does this? So you could theoretically just use another app, right?
Yeah, so if you use – so the RAW that's coming off of there is – and this is a whole other thing. The RAW that's coming off of there is now purpose-built for the AI and the ML. So if you just use any RAW app, you might get results that are hard to work with. Halide created their own RAW pipeline to sort of give you their version of a smart RAW that's very different than Apple's. So you'd have to find an app that does RAW but also knows how to handle the kind of RAW data Apple's pulling off of a computational photography system now.
Here's in his post, he shows on the left iPhone 10 RAW, which actually looks pretty acceptable, and the iPhone 10s RAW, which is overblown, it's overexposed. In fact, if you look in the details, the iPhone 10 exposed at 1/60th at ISO 40, the 10s 1/120th at ISO 80. So
1/120th, yeah.
1/120th. So he says basically this is very bad for – he says we make a camera app that takes RAW photos, so this is very bad. Not only does RAW not benefit from merging multiple photos, but iPhone photos generally get very noisy above iOS 0200. In the right-hand image, the highlights are clipped, so you can't recover them. It's overexposed, and it's permanently overexposed. So that's why they've created basically, as you said, a new pipeline specifically for Halide. Yeah. So when should you use this, though? That's the question.
I would say that have the Halide app is amazing. I love it. It's one of the reasons why I would love to switch back to iPhone at some point, because I can't get that. I would love for them to make it for I don't care about all the hundreds of different Android phones out there. Just make it for the phone that I choose to buy. I'll be fine. I'll give you my $10 and you'll make a profit off of that. I do think that that Apple's stock camera app is perfect for what a smartphone camera is supposed to do. People are not interested in fine art photography. They're really, although you can do fine art photography under certain circumstances, it really is designed to push one button, get the best results possible. Whatever results you come up with are probably going to be way better than the user is hoping for. And as engineers and as artists at Apple, they want to make the best picture possible. But this is the reason why I stopped doing side-by-side, like published comparisons years ago, because I do think they're, at this point, they're totally counterproductive. They will teach you that they will get you to try to trust a test result instead of your own eyes. The fact that one picture is a little bit too warm to your eyes compared to this other picture, okay, but that doesn't mean that that's something that A, you would have noticed if you didn't have this side-by-side comparison. And it's not as though you're going to take every single picture and think, oh my God, this camera is always taking yellow photos. I can't stand it. So it's interesting for people who are paid to comment about this. Super interesting to read stuff from experts who absolutely know their stuff, and they're not simply saying, well, I took these three pictures with these three cameras, and I noticed that the skin is a lot smoother in this one. The question is, did you not like the picture that the iPhone took? And having seen enough of these examples, I don't have a new iPhone yet, but having seen enough of these examples, I would like to see Apple fine-tune that a bit. I expect that they're going to, but it doesn't take anything less than fantastic pictures.
I might argue with you on that. In certain conditions, it doesn't. Apple's goal is, completely reasonably, to let average people get great pictures without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But here's a good example. This on the right is iPhone Smart HDR, and you can see the smoothing that's happened to the singer's face has completely obliterated detail. I mean, it looks like a watercolor. Halide's Smart HDR does preserve the detail in the singer's face. So in low light situations, for instance, there are some problems. But he points out you can turn off, which I didn't know, Apple's HDR. It's a kind of non-obvious, but you go to Settings, Camera, Disable Smart HDR, and then when you open the camera app, you'll have an HDR setting in the top controls. So that gives you a chance to turn it off or on when you want it, and there are times you may not want it. You should also.
Although I don't know if that's Smart HDR. That might be the.
That's just the old HDR.
I have to double check that.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely some issues, and Halide isn't the perfect solution for it either. It would be nice if Apple. What would be really nice is if Apple did a JPEG or a high efficiency image format image that was using all the smarts. Maybe over smoothing, maybe not, and then gave you a switch that said, "Okay," or you could just have the raw.
You can turn on keep both images, so you'll get the regular image and the HDR saved to your camera.
The problem is you're getting this Apple Smart Raw, which is a little less than. Good.
Yeah, you're talking to like a nerd who like owns like way more cameras than he actually needs, and even I'm saying that I think that the better job you do of hiding things like raw features from the user, given what people are using, given what one of these 100 million iPhone users are using it for, the less confusion you're going to create. I love the idea of putting, I'm not always a fan of Apple collecting every application preference inside this extra app called Settings, but I like these solutions that say if you are interested enough in having raw quality, you will have done the Google search, or you will have read the iBooks manual we created for you, and you will know to look into this settings pane and turn on raw capture.
Or, I just think that and I commend Apple for doing this, make it possible for third party apps like Halide to completely bypass the processing and do their own thing, and I think that might be the best of both worlds.
That's an understood part of development. Apple oftentimes people who've been developing for Apple for a long, 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 long time develop really, really good relationships with engineers inside of Apple, and so it's possible for them to get non-competitive help, but if they say, here's what we're trying to do and we can't figure out how to do it, they will often get solutions from Apple that are not necessarily available in the book that you buy, that you download from Amazon.com about programming. So these are the people that know how to push this stuff to its highest limits. These are the people who can develop a raw pipeline. And Apple does this because I do think that philosophically, they know that inside Apple, they're developing for the regular consumer, and they are grateful to third-party developers like the developers of Halide, who are going to say, we're going to let you create the pro level thing, because we know that it's easier to make 100 million consumers happy with a camera app than to make 100 like pro or semi-pro photographers happy with how something works. Well, and I think that Apple's helping behind the scenes.
I still think that Apple, I mean, I've said this before, but I think Apple focuses almost all their efforts on what will 90% of the people want to do 90% of the time. And if you're developing an app, I always think that you should. What we did when we were developing apps for the Mac platform was to look at that 10-10. You know, like, what do 10% of people want to do 10% of the time? You know, or 10% of people want to do 100% of the time. But whatever, we want to live in that little world is the place that you can safely solve things for a while. That, and you know that Apple's probably not going to encroach on that. And those are the people also that are willing to pay for something that is different.
If you care about all of this, go to blog.halide.com.
Yes.
Read Sebastian DeWitt's very, very good, I think, with lots of examples article.
It's great.
His general conclusion is it's still a great camera, but you need to be aware of what it's doing. And in some cases, especially if you're a serious photographer, there may be. Here's a good example that Apple provided of how it smooths in low light compared to daylight. And that's, Apple said that this is what it did. These were images it used in its product line.
And that's the front sensor, which is much smaller in low light.
Yeah.
And that concert side by side picture, either one of those is miraculous on a camera. It's only recently that you would look at people who are taking pictures at concerts saying, "Oh, you're an idiot. You're not going to get a good picture."
Right.
And now you're getting pictures that are at least good and oftentimes great. And
used a camera phone will recognize this crunched image. I mean, I'm not sure I would call that a great image.
I'm saying this is pretty good. That's from the same camera, just
different processing.
Exactly, but the light is not strongly honored. She's not hit by a spotlight. It's super, super low light, and at least give you a picture that you can share with your friends. Say, hey, look how close I was to the stage.
Right.
And just to give you an indication of how good these cameras are, this year I did my one of my goals for this year was to have my photography derided by. By a group of people with higher knowledge of what constitutes good photography. So I decided I'm going to enter at least one juried photo show. I submitted three, and the one that they accepted that's going to be on the walls in a couple of weeks was shot with an iPhone 10 last year.
Wow.
And it looks magnificent. You would not – and granted, it's not that every picture you take with an iPhone 10 is beautiful, but last week I went to a really good professional print studio and produced an 11x17 and a 16x20, and both of them look magnificent. You would not guess – There were some crimes from the fact that this was shot with a standard camera app and saved as a JPEG, but easily concealed. But there's so much detail, so much tonality, that even blown up to that huge size, it looks magnificent. So really, Apple always has so much to be proud of, because they were always at the head of the line for people who were saying, I know that people are just posting things on Facebook and Instagram, but some these pictures are going to wind up are going to be like the last picture you ever got of your grandmother before she unfortunately unexpectedly dropped dead. And that's going to be the picture that someone's going to print at 8x10 and put on the sofa table. So it's like, there's anything we can do to make that one button push as effective as possible, we're going to do. They have lots to be proud of.
And as Sebastian points out, Apple, since it's all software, Apple can over time modify this, tweak it.
We're moving into such a crazy place when it comes to cameras, where the physical element is becoming completely separated from the calculation. I mean, we've been doing this for a while. When we talk about a CMOS sensor or even a CCD, the CMOS sensor, everything is all the little RGBs are all next to each other. So there's a lot going on when you see an image, to even have it look sharp, because it's all blurry. But we've now moved, we're just going to keep on moving, I think, down this path where there's so much of it's computational. And I say this, I think, every time we talk about cameras, but the funnest thing to look at for me is to play with things with focus. On the phone, you take your portrait photos and then you open it up and you rotate around to see how it viewed the 3D space and are able to really kind of dig into those things. And it really gives you a place to experiment with the idea of computational photography.
Remind me, I have to re-download Focus.
Yeah.
My new phone.
Yeah, it's great.
Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. A study just came out from MIT, and it doesn't surprise me, but it probably won't surprise you, but it does confirm what everybody, I think, thought. IT occupations have grown by almost 20% in the last, say, 10 years, between 2004 and 2017. IT jobs are out there, lots of them, and they're great jobs. While the earning growth for college graduates has flattened since 2000, earnings for individuals working in IT, significant growth. Now's the time to take a look at a new career in IT or move up the ladder by getting some skills, additional skills. IT Pro TV has you covered either way, from CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council to VMware. They've got all the certs everybody wants. You can study in over 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training. Great hosts, too. They do it kind of like we do in a talk show format. They have a chat room. If you're watching live, they're live every day. Content goes studio to the web in 24 hours. So it's always fresh, always up to date. And they're always adding new content areas, which makes it a little interesting to find. That's why they've really improved the search. They've got all the courses listed by category, certification, job role. Stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC. Of course, they have iOS and Android apps. And that all makes it very easy to watch at home on the big screen, in the car as you drive in, at work on your computer. And if you manage a team, man, you got to look at IT Pro TV. It's a great way to keep your team's skills up to date. Look at that. They're over 100. They just went over 100,000 members as we were watching. That's kind of amazing. Congratulations. I hope there's a little party going on right now at IT Pro TV. Go to itpro.tv/MacBreak to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution. Really great way to keep your team up to date, and you can track all their, you know, their viewing and their logins and all that. And you can request a free team trial at itpro.tv/MacBreak. If you're an individual that's looking to get some training to get a job or improve your skills, there's a free 7-day trial for you at the same address, itpro.tv/MacBreak. Use this offer code and you'll get 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. 30% off. You have to use the offer code MacBreak30. MacBreak30. So just to do a little math for you, normal standard subscriptions, $570 a year, which I think is a great deal. Use MacBreak30, $399 a year. $399 a year. For top-notch, engaging, fun training in every area of IT. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. Of course, itpro.tv/MacBreak. It's time. It's emoji time.
Yes, sir.
It's emoji time. 70 new emojis coming to iOS 12.1, including hair. This is from Engadget. Hair options, sports items, and animals.
And Montreal bagels. I'm claiming them as Montreal bagels.
I think they look like Montreal bagels. They don't look... By the way, I read an article by a New Yorker just the other day that said the last great bagels are still made in Montreal. They're not made in New York anymore.
Yeah, I know. Tell that.
People
tell
like Zabar's have ruined it. You know, it started when Cynthia Nixon is running for governor in the great state of New York. Got some controversy because... She ordered a cinnamon raisin bagel with Gravlax, and people were up in arms.
Is Gravlax a Pokemon?
No, it is a delicious spread. However,
and there's rainbow bagels some places too.
It is a savory spread that shouldn't go on a sweet bagel, and I understand that point of view, but honestly.
I mean, I don't know, savory, sweet. Works for me.
Not be bad. Like chocolate covered pretzels. I like where you're hitting.
It's like salt on your chocolate. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Didn't this sort of stuff happen to Leslie Knope in Parks and Recreation every single time she tried to run for anything?
Well, it's that old thing that, you know, trying to look like you're a native when you're not. But in fact, Cynthia Nixon lives in Manhattan, so I think she can have her bagel any damn way she pleases. Thank you very much. And if, you know, I got to go to Montreal because I want a real bagel. The last great bagel still made in Montreal.
We'll go to Fairmount. We'll go to St. Viateur. St. Viateur and Fairmount are across the street from each other, ancient rivals. I like them both. It's controversial, but I like them both.
Yeah, they used to, you know, New York bagels used to have, they were denser. They were like lead weights, frankly. You could use them to fish.
Yep.
And now they're all fluffy and puffy and, you know, I mean,
it's just kind of the Noah's bagel thing.
It's round bread. And, and the hole has gotten smaller and smaller. It's just not the same.
No.
They still make them the old fashioned way in Montreal.
We still got holes that'll drop you filling right on the floor.
Here comes a kangaroo, a lobster, a cupcake, and a mango. That is a, what is that? Is that a hornet? That's scary. I don't want a
mosquito,
wasp.
I think.
Oh, is it a skeeter? Ugh. Why did they add that? And a raccoon?
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay, lacrosse I can get behind. Frisbee I can get
behind. And still no poutine. I mean, like, you should be able to hold down on the French fries and get poutine, tater tots, and mashed potato options. And they just, Unicode is failing me.
Failing us.
Yeah.
So I have the public beta of 12.1 on my iPad. Are you saying I should have those emojis?
You should.
I think the poutine is being blocked by the American Medical Association.
I bet the heart
surgeons around the world, or maybe they're actually promoting it so they get more work. But
according to BuzzFeed, Apple has also proposed and will have next year 13 new emojis for those with disabilities.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Apple. That's so awesome. Emojis of guide and service dogs, people with canes, individuals signing the word deaf. An ear with a hearing aid, people in wheelchairs and prosthetic limbs. I love that. That's fantastic. I'll be using that hearing aid emoji a lot.
I
wonder if they're going to add one for like miniature pony service animals, because the Americans with Disabilities Act only acknowledges two animals that can be trained for as service animals, and believe it or not, the miniature horse is the other one.
What? I want a miniature horse on the plane with me next time.
Now, so do I.
Like, that would be awesome. Yeah.
I'll ride it through the aisles.
I'm thinking of the emotional support, Hamone Barrico. I'm really working on that. I'm going to get a little thing.
Well, I was so jealous. I went to the casino and got some Hamone Barrico just like the amusing experience.
Jealous.
Robichon serves it.
It's so good.
As a freelancer, I'm still trying to figure out whether I can get more clicks before these new emojis come out and say Apple should, once again, you've got a lobster emoji. It's a red lobster, which means that it's been cooked. You want it to be like brownish green, which means it's still alive. Given that there's people who are saying you need to anesthetize you can't boil these animals alive anymore. It's cruel. I don't know whether I'll get more views with publishing that before or being the first one to have to write about Lobster Gate, like after these emojis
come out. Lobster Gate.
We're doing some A-B tests. these people want to see a lobster.
See, what you said, you went to the casino. Did you go to Joël Robuchon?
I went to Atelier.
You went to the Atelier?
At the casino, because I know they have a giant...
jealous. They do.
Hamon and Barrica right at the counter.
They do. And in Paris, they had one. And I had some. Yeah.
And they give you so much. It is so good.
So good. Well, they ought to for that price.
I know.
Oh, man. Now I have two reasons to visit you, Renee.
Yes. Bagels
and the Atelier. Man.
We'll do it, Leo. Yeah.
Lisa, can we go to Montreal? We could do the show from Montreal.
Yes.
Totally.
Why don't we do that?
Just don't try to leave late from the airport.
Why?
They stop flights at like 6:30 or 7 o'clock.
It's a civilized nation.
I know. I was just like, I had to get. I had to get to D.C. or something from Montreal, and I was just like, what?
We just don't have a lot of flights, Alex.
We
don't have many.
It was like my flight was being delayed or it was going to be canceled or something, and then they were like, all the flights are
sorry.
There's no flight after 7 p.m. or something like that.
You are stuck here. Why would you ever want to leave?
Well,
you must stay in Montreal.
Bars stay open to 3, but not the airports.
Yep.
Your prime minister is so handsome. And when you ask him a question about quantum computing, he asks you which type. I only know of two.
Hey, what's a good time of year to go to Montreal, Renee?
I mean, it really depends. So, like, it's really cold in the winter, but you have like ice hotels. But then in the spring and fall, it's nice, especially the fall because the leaves, you know, change color. It looks really nice. In the summer, we have jazz festivals and comedy festivals, but it's hot. So it really depends on what you like.
Oh, man.
I think I've only been there in the fall, and it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Is it too soon for me to go on vacation again?
It's never too soon.
Here's an amazing story. Apple Watch apps instantly wait 64-bit thanks to a little checkbox in Xcode called Enable Bitcode. According to the Accidental Tech podcast, it was quietly responsible for the smooth launch of software for the Series 4 last month. So Xcode 7, back in 2015, added support for Bitcode. You're going to have to explain this to me, Renee. I presume you understand this.
My favorite part of the story is that the headline said obscure, and then Chris Lattner tweeted out, who's calling it obscure?
Bitcode. So Bitcode is like pseudocode, right? It's not machine language. It's an intermediate
Yeah, so basically the developer uploads to Apple, and then Apple creates bitcode versions that are specific to the processor. So, for example, if you get a new iPhone, you'll notice you have to re-download your apps. They don't just transfer over because it's downloading the versions of the apps that are compiled for the processor that you're running
but
on that
specific device. But the developer didn't do that. Apple does it automatically.
Yeah, and people were saying early on that, oh, it's not really, it's just a pain in the butt and there's no real benefit to it. And then Apple bought it, it's time, you know, bought it, it's time, one of those conjugations, and said, here, 64-bit, and just pushed down.
So if you wrote an app for the Apple Watch and you checked that box enabling bitcode, Apple didn't receive the fully compiled version of your app. It received a bitcode version of your app, which it then transcompiles into different versions depending on which series watch you're using.
Yeah, and I believe it was mandatory for Apple Watch. I think it was optional for iPhone for a while. I think it was mandatory for Apple Watch if memory serves. And the idea was that Apple could the idea was to sort of future-proof it against future optimizations. So that so you would not have to go back and make changes to your apps. Apple could deliver some of those changes, especially at the lower processor levels for you at deployment.
So the new Apple Watch has an S4, 64-bit S4 processor in it.
And the rumor has it that it's actually running iPhone efficiency cores, maybe like the Chinook class cores, which is a real big deal if that turns out to be true.
I have to say, it is absolutely the case that everything is faster. Apps launch faster. Everything is like it should be, like in real time instead of wait.
Yeah.
And I just assumed that was a faster processor. But in fact, it's not merely a faster processor. It's 64-bit code.
It's amazing that we went, the original Apple Watch ran at the thermal limits of that casing, and now we've gotten to this just a scant four versions later.
It's really remarkable.
I love this watch. I got to say,
I do too. And I was really skeptical on that.
I've talked about it before on the show. I was like, it solves enough problems that I buy it. You know, I was like, the first four ones, I was kind of like, it's okay. You know, I like the timer.
I stopped wearing it right through series two.
I was kind of like, I like the timer, and there's enough things that I didn't like it as much as my Citizen. I had a Navahawker. I still have one laying around somewhere, but I was like, I still don't like it as much as my other watch, but it still has things I need, so I just keep wearing it. And I figured eventually Apple will figure this out, and it'll be better because this is okay. It's still better than anything else I've had. I mean, as far from a service perspective, I have learned to turn almost all the notifications off because they drive me crazy.
Oh, I turn them all on. I love it.
Oh, I hate it.
I want to know what's going on in the world. Not.
I love the new deliver quietly feature. So a lot of the notifications I used to get, I just hit the deliver quietly, and now I can go to the notification center and see them, but they're not going beep, 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 beep on my devices all the time.
Right.
Yeah. I'm in a lot of meetings where there's people that demand absolute attention. So it's, looking down is seen as across.
Well, that's what you don't see them. You don't see them until you go to a notification center and ask to see what you missed.
Yeah. So I just like to stay focused. And so I turned all those things off. But when I got this, I was like, I don't know if it'll be that much better, but I can't keep on doing the show without it on. And I'm just like, I put, you know, of course I use the most complex,
Yeah, I like the new infograph.
I've got it all. I've got it all lined up, and I'm like, it's the best watch I've had now. It's finally gotten to that point where I'm like, okay, I really like the watch, because before it was just kind of like, it was useful, kind of. But it's great.
Love it. Speaking of great, you bought an iPhone. Did you buy which one? Did you buy?
I got the Max.
The Max.
Max.
I shot a video.
You shot a video.
I put it on Twitter.
Not with your new iPhone.
I don't do that right.
No, your old iPhone.
So the X, I felt kind of guilty because it was like, it's kind of like going out on a, I'm going to go out on a date with someone else and then
doing it with
you.
I shot the video with the X.
What? Yeah, exactly. This is what's, you're about to go to somebody else, you know? And so, I shot it with the X. But this was, so evidently you can go into the Apple store and say, I'd like to have a glass. I'd like to have a glass protector for my phone. I just said it thinking they were going to give me a case. I didn't realize he was going to bring out this whole, Belkin made this thing, I think, just for Apple. Maybe it's for the other cell phone companies as well. But it's like a whole application process.
Is it like when you go to the House of Beef in San Francisco and they wheel out the Zeppelin?
It's kind of like that. It's like they're like, oh yeah, we got this thing, and they don't. It doesn't even come in a box. It comes in like a piece of plastic. They just kind of open it up and put it in, and so. But it is.
It's the fastest way I've ever seen that.
Well, not only is it fast, it now looks like it was literally designed to be on the phone. Like it was
when it
was finished. It fits perfectly. It's perfectly registered. There's no bubbles. And now, like, it's gone from, you know, there's an argument about whether, you know, you should. My former coworker at ILM, Stu Mashewitz, was like, "You're putting a plastic on your couch all the time," and
it is kind of like that.
I get that, but at the same time, I don't like scratches. So if I scratch it, I want to be able to pull it off and put another one on. And in the past, I've lost a little bit on it, and so I've decided sometimes I don't want it on there. This is the first time; like, it is perfect. It is a perfect application of this process, and it's done at the Apple Store when you buy it. I guess you can go in and just do it if you've already bought it. I don't know. I think it's like $40, and I guess the process is free, but it's $40. It's $40 to buy it. But it's a. I think I was just more excited when he. I just thought I was going to buy a screen applicator, and then I was going to go through the.
You should put this on Reddit because it is one of those videos is just kind of curiously satisfying.
It is.
I will
watch him do this. Yeah,
it's like a Polaroid for your screen.
It's kind of remarkable. Yeah.
It is.
There's something about. I know Alton Brown hates like unitasker tools, but there is something about a bespoke tool that only does one thing, but that one thing is incredibly complicated without it. And once you have it, it's like you want to do this all day long. It's so easy.
It's like Charles Emerson Winchester III. One thing at a time. Very, very well.
It was always so stressful to do this. You never want to do it yourself. And it's always been this thing. And when you look at that device and you look at the whole process, they spent a lot of money and a lot of time figuring out how to do this well.
Because the biggest complaint against screen protectors like that is it's hard to put them on well.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so it's
so they figured out a way to overcome the number one complaint. Ironically, you have an iPhone that is without a doubt the most robust iPhone Apple's ever made. We had Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of CNET, on Sunday on Twit. CNET did a drop test on the iPhone XS. They could barely scratch it. They could not break it.
Some people have broken. I would still be super. I mean, like some people.
Well, don't
have broken
do it on them. Purpose. Yeah.
No. and even with testing, so much depends on angle and what surface it's on, and if there's any like small perturbances on that surface that could cause you can break those things, and you could. I've dropped mine. Well, I'm not gonna. I don't want to knock wood real hard now. I've dropped mine, and it's fine. But I have seen them drop and break. So always be careful.
Also realize that even though it might look fine, you could have created microfractures that mean like the next time you drop it, it's just going to be like a Hollywood special effect. It's going to explode.
Okay. Like, don't use it as a diving camera. It is water resistant. Yeah,
don't use it as a diving camera. Remember that famous Darwin Award about the lawyer giving the tour every month to like new interns in the law office saying, and these windows on our 80th floor office are so strong. Look, I can run straight into it and it won't go through and nothing happens. And it worked the first like 30 times, but the 31st time he wound up being an internet meme.
Here's Vanessa dropping it. No. Thank you. Here's Vanessa dropping it over and over again. And, this is a shot from the iPhone while it's being dropped. She dropped it about 4 feet, something like
mean.
That.
It's just mean. I can't watch
it. I know. It's hard to watch, isn't it?
Smooth her
skin. Oh, God. But Lindsay said she saw the phone after the fact, and it was barely anything wrong with it. It even landed face down on the concrete. Eesh.
What's interesting this year is that usually, like with chemistry, you've got a balance. Like the more scratch resistant you make it, the easier it is to shatter. The more shatter resistant, the easier it is to scratch. And Apple said it's tried its best with Corning to really improve both those things this year. I don't want to put it to test, but I'm happy that if it does save more people more time, that's a benefit.
See, and I don't even like see the little nick that she's showing there.
Yeah,
maybe
she rubbed it out. It's going away.
See, I don't even like those. I
typically scratch mine with the back camera of the other phone. Like I'll have both phones, and for some reason, I'll use the like one camera will scratch the other phone.
All right. We're not recommending this at home. I'm just pointing out that you put a screen protector on a screen that's less likely to scratch.
You have no idea how much grit is in your pocket until you have like two phones in there.
That's true.
One piece of grit gets between them, and then they start to and that's when you get scratches.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never had a screen protector. I do keep a case on mine, but I kind of like what the on the Antiques Roadshow they refer to as good honest wear. You know, one of the things I'm happiest with about my now 4-year-old camera is that now there's like the paint is like sort of rubbed off on the hard corners, and it says this is seen some stuff, man. So I don't mind a little bit of nicks and scratches. So
Johnny Ive awarded the 2018 Stephen Hawking Fellowship from the Cambridge Union Society. Ive was one of the most influential individuals in modern technology. He will speak during the Michaelmas term at Cambridge University's debating chamber. In case you're there for Michaelmas, hi thee to
stay
the
for the Ive
debating chamber,
Sir Johnny,
where he will be
first the blue Peter Gold badge and now this.
Oh, it looks like the debating chamber looks kind of like if you've ever seen the British legislature,
yeah, like Parliament,
like Parliament, yeah.
We are learning that on August 10th, the FBI searched the home of a suspect in Columbus, Ohio, during a child abuse investigation. They had a search warrant, and as part of that search warrant, FBI agents ordered the suspect to face the iPhone and trigger face ID.
That's a little bit it's a little extra creepy, or excuse me, problematic, because this wasn't just them testing the limits of a warrant. The warrant actually explicitly spelled out, here's what we might want to get, and it will include biometric information used for collecting this data. So it was all spelled out in the warrant, and this guy was in the position of, there's no way I can turn this down. This is spelled out.
Apparently, police are now using boilerplate language in warrants to cover Face ID. Yeah. Now, they have done fingerprint with Touch ID in the past. Well,
and it's, you hit the power button twice, is that right? Or you hit...
You squeeze the phone.
Squeeze the phone?
Squeeze both, but yeah, the two sides.
And so, I mean, that's just something to know. I mean, I'm glad this person got caught. Evidently, they got caught
Child
pornography. So I'm not saying that they should have done it, but if you're worried about it on your own, squeezing the phone on either side before you hand it to someone can be done fairly subtly. Then it removes that. And now, the other thing that I think that I don't know if we saw in the news here is that, I guess in New Zealand, they're passing a law that says that you can pay $5,000 if they ask for your electronics, you can pay a $5,000 fine if you don't hand it over. Now, they say it's got to be reasonable, but remember that New Zealand is
part
of...
They have to have probable cause, in effect, suspect you of wrongdoing. It's the Custom and Excise Act of 2018 comes into effect today in New Zealand, and you can't refuse a digital search. You cannot refuse a digital search. If you do, you'll be fined up to $5,000. Your device will be seized, and they'll search it for you anyway.
Yeah. New Zealand and Australia are both having these kind of problems. And worldwide, it's customs that are trying. It's customs that are at the bleeding edge of this, because historically, for hundreds of years, there's been the principle of law that the country has a right to control anything that's going into the country, and that can extend to, if you're carrying documents, we have the right to ask for those documents if you're carrying them in the country, or we have the right to simply tell you that you don't get to come in. So this stuff is going to be tested. And it's also, and by the way, it's perfectly fine to be incredibly conflicted about a lot of this. I'm very, very bothered by the requirement to unlock and decrypt documents that you have encrypted, because I think that part of the an additional bill of member of the Bill of Rights should be that we have the right to keep secrets from everybody else if we want to. However, it's important to notice that because this phone was unlocked, it's not only got the evidence against this person who was in possession of child pornography, but also connections to the other people in the pipeline where he got it from, other people he might have been swapping stuff with. And so I'm so conflicted about a lot of the stuff. I just keep falling back on the basic things, where the basic principle that we've just chosen to be a society where it's okay, where we'd much rather retain personal freedoms and let the occasional guilty person go free for lack of evidence than treat everybody walking down the street as though they're a potential criminal and have fewer criminals on the street. That's the choice we've made.
I think the mistake the governments are making, I mean, I think they have the right to do what they're going to do, obviously, but I think that the mistake that they're making is by doing things that are overt like this, they are creating a sensitivity towards privacy where I think that they were actually doing, they're doing pretty well before they started coming up over the radar. So they, you know, as far as gathering this information, and so they had all this information, and if they just quietly did it and didn't push the envelope, they wouldn't have everybody thinking about it, and they wouldn't have companies building entire business plans around thwarting it.
That's an excellent
point. And so their acts are going to damage their ability to do it, and then they're going to have to, you know, then what's going to happen is they're going to have to write a law that will appear to the public as horrible, and they're going to end up with they're going to end up with this huge fight with their population, where before they did that, they were actually getting more data than they've ever had before. I mean, they have this crystal clear, you know, HD view of us, and there's like 3 or 4 pixels that aren't there, and they're trying to force those last 3 or 4 pixels, and they're going to lose half of it in the middle of all of this, or they're going to end up in, you know, near revolution when people start saying, well, you can't keep on doing this, because, you know, what's going to happen with New Zealand? I mean, with all of this, New Zealand's part of the an information network with the United States, you know, New Zealand, Australia, and a couple other countries. So, you know, what will happen is that the you know, intelligence agencies of the United States will say, we need you to search this person when they land. We need their electronics. And what they'll do is they'll pull the electronics for New Zealand and they'll send it back to the United States. You know, like that's how this is all going to, you know, how it's going to come through. So so I think that the governments are making a mistake by making it such an overt process, and because they're not going to win. You know, they're not, you know, like this is not.
Well,
you know,
I think they eventually are, because it's the worst kind of arms race, because if we can't travel with a phone or even carry a phone with us in a car that might have a busted headlight without worrying that that phone could be searched. The step one is, okay, now there's a shortcut that will lock the phone and refuse to allow it to be unlocked with biometrics. The next step, and then they will find a way legally around that to simply say, well, you're going to have to provide the biometrics to open this up. And then the next step is going to be for Apple, I hope Apple and Google, to say, okay, here is the Jason Bourne hidden feature. If you hit the power button 5 times in a row, it will actually delete the encryption key on your phone and render all the content of it unrecoverable. It will put it right back into factory mode, which is something that I would that if I were traveling to certain hostile countries, I would certainly consider doing.
No,
it's a lot easier.
I agree with you.
Then the fear after that is, now they're going to say they have the only way for them to protect that source, potential source of evidence, is to make it illegal for phones to be encrypted or to insist that there be a backdoor that cannot be defeated. So I'm very, very worried about what we're going to see over the next 5 or 10 years as law enforcement, who are, again, I have so much sympathy for them. There's so much work that they can't do if people have the ability to have routine access to files that government cannot possibly locate or decrypt, but they're going to get increasingly desperate or increasingly frustrated, and all we need is the right people or the wrong people in the lawmaking seats to make really horrible anti-privacy laws even worse.
But I think, and again, I think that they were doing, I do agree with you, we have to balance this. I mean, the reason that I work in a lot of places around the world, and some of them are pretty rough. The reason that we live in houses without fences all the way around us, and the reason that, that every block, there's places that I work where every block there's someone with an AK-47 or a M16 or whatever is holding, looking out. The reason that we have that that we don't have that in the United States is because of all this intelligence, you know, because of what they're doing with the phones, because of the what the NSA does. Like, let's be clear that is why we can have the life that we have in the United States. So we have to always take that into account when we talk through this, is that they're having that ability is what doesn't have a bomb going off every day, you know, somewhere in the United States, and doesn't have things that seem very soft be attacked. So these things are, it's a very important conversation. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be getting the data. I'm just saying that by overtly, you know, going after this, you know, I think that they are risking getting into this huge push, because I think that they will have trouble making those laws because until there's a huge, you know, what'll happen is when that will happen is after a huge terrorist act, because they'll use that as the next reason to go down that path. They won't be able to do it just randomly, because it's, you know, and that's what they try to do with San Bernardino, you know, is they want to use that to close up the gaps that they want to go through. But without that, I mean, people are going to be concerned, and they should be concerned about, I mean, it's you, the data is something that it's fine when you think that everybody's doing the right thing. But what happens, you know, we've already had reports of intelligence agencies getting a hold of that and individual human beings taking advantage of the fact that they have that data to look at things that they're not supposed to be looking at. That's the problem you get into.
I'm in the mood for some olive oil. I don't know about you. But after I want some.
No, it'll make that go down easier.
What?
Some nice, flavorful.
Tres Pontes premium quality extra virgin olive oil. That's what I'm talking about. We were in Spain. I think Spain is the number one olive oil producer, maybe number two after Italy in the world. And we went to this beautiful. Oh, no, I guess it was France. We're in France, in Provence, and a beautiful place where they made olive oil, and they had this 300-year-old olive tree, and we tasted all the olive oil, and they said, oh, no, we are very proud. It's less than 0.4% acidity, and I thought, you know, I've got better olive oil at home, actually. Hand-picked from the Casablanca Valley in Chile. It's Tres Pontes, less than 0.2%, actually, in most cases, much less than 0.2%. It is the sweetest, smoothest olive oil. And if you love the Tres Pontes coffee that we talk about all the time, as much as I do, you're going to love this gourmet extra virgin olive oil. So this is actually becoming their mission at Tres Pontes, to search the world to find the best small single-family farms that have never imported into the United States and to create a great farm-to-table experience for us. All this amazing olive oil comes from Jose Miguel Arnaz's orchard in Chile, in the Casablanca Valley. It is one of the few valleys in Chile with optimum conditions for producing a premium Evo. As with everything Tres Pontes does, I think I could do it right now. There's a QR code we could scan on the olive oil bottle so you could see exactly where the olive trees were. Let's see. Open in Google Maps. There they are, the olive trees that this olive oil came from. I love it. Right there in that particular olive orchard, right there. Acidity it's actually one quarter what it has to be called extra virgin olive oil, because they do something very important. They extract it by natural means. They squeeze it, no chemicals, no heat. They prioritize aroma, flavor, and quality over yield. They use five different premium olive varietals. The flavor profile, I don't know, Alex, you've tried it. We've sent some out to you guys, too.
Even my kids like it, which is not something I expected, but, you know, we dip
you can dip bread in it.
The pre-dinner thing now is which I don't usually eat very much bread, is dipping the bread into the olive oil. And we didn't do it before. I mean, it's just so
it really
good.
Teaches the kids, you all
the kids like it a lot.
And of course,
this little balsamic vinaigrette or a little port.
Well, I'll fix myself like a real lunch. And then for dinner, it will just be a plate of cheeses, a half loaf of Italian bread that I got at the store like the day before, and just a little saucer.
It's really good.
And so instead of like A, instead of cooking, and B, instead of adding another 800 calories or 1,000 calories, it's like very continental, and it's tasty, and it's when you taste the goods, there are things like mustards and olive oils. The difference between like the cheap stuff and the good stuff is within range of most people, and it's the improvement is disproportionate in relationship to the amount of extra money you spend. It's like when you buy really good olive oil or really good mustard, it's like, my God, now I'm buying the store brand ham, but now my mouth does not know it because this.
Well, I'll be honest, you get this at such a good price because we got a great discount for you. I don't just use it for like putting on salad or eating bread. I use it for cooking too. I have a squeeze bottle I keep loaded with Tres Pontes olive oil because I cook with olive oil, almost everything with olive oil now. And I think it's better for you and it sure does taste good. Sign up for, here's how you can get a great deal on the best olive oil you've ever had in your life. Sign up for an olive oil subscription. Save 10% off any bottle you select. And look, they have the giant ones, the little ones, your choice. If you wish, you can mix and match this with Tres Pontes coffee, too, by the way. Discount applies, so you can have a subscription to coffee and olive oil. And do this at trespontes.com/MacBreak, T-R-E-S, PONTAS.com/MacBreak. Use the code MacBreak. You'll get another 10% off. So you're now getting 20% off every bottle of olive oil in your subscription. And that makes this totally affordable. I grew up in a house, because my mom cooked Italian,
right,
where we had a can, one of those big cans of Italian olive oil next to the stove all the time. For me, it's Chile now. I'll tell you, not, even mom loves this better. You got to get the subscription to get the discount, though, by the way. So if you want the discount, sign up for the subscription. And by the way, it's easy to cancel if you decide, I have enough olive oil now. I never seem to have enough olive oil. and you get an additional 10% off. You could, if you want just one bottle, order it on Amazon. You won't get the discount. But you want the 20% off, go to trespuntas.com/MacBreak. Use the offer code MacBreak and get the best olive oil you've ever had. I've talked to the Tres Puntas guys, you know, and they originally just were going to do coffee. They found this olive oil and they said, all right, we're going to do olive oil. And I said, you really could make a business out of farm to table, single family farm, getting the best ingredients somewhere in the world and offering them to our audience. And I think they might start doing that. I hope they do. But they've got two to start, the coffee and the olive oil. And they really are good at finding this amazing, amazing stuff. And thanks. We should really thank Jose Miguel Arnez for making the best olive oil I've ever had. Trespuntas.com/MacBreak. Just checking Paul Thurrott's Twitter because, as you know, Microsoft is having an event right now. So far, nothing to report. Wait a minute. Three new tweets have just come in.
No USB-C,
on Surface Pro. That sucks. Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
However, Windows 10 version 1809 is coming out today. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So... well, we'll have to find out more.
Does that mean it has a lightning port? I'm very confused.
No, it has that stupid Surface Connect.
Yeah.
SCSI.
Uh-oh.
SCSI for mobile.
Panos Panay took away Thurrott's Surface, and it's getting weird now. Uh-oh. It's the Surface Pro 6.
Thurrott block tackled them.
Uh-oh. All right. Let's get our picks of the week, and I'll keep you posted on this, starting with Rene Ritchie.
So my pick, if you're familiar with Linea, which is a great iPad art application, I mean, you can take notes with it, you can do art with it, you can do brain boggling with it, almost anything that you can use an Apple Pencil for on the iPad Pro, you can use in Linea. It's by the Icon Factory, who have been making phenomenal
love
apps
since
time immemorial.
They're finally terrific. Getting out of the Twitter business, I guess, huh?
Well, I think Twitter is getting them out of the Twitter business.
Jeez,
so,
Louise.
They've with the advent of the iPhone XS, and especially I guess the iPhone XS Max, they've made a version for the iPhone. It's called Linea Go, sort of like Teen Titans Go or Pokemon Go. And it's just great. Of course, the first thing I did was draw Batman because that's the first thing that I do with
that's
any
your test.
That's my test. I really wish there was Apple Pencil support for the iPhone XS Max. Of course, that's not the Icon Factory's fault. That's Apple's fault. But what you can do, even with your finger or a regular stylus, is still miraculous. They've taken the same sort of really good, minimal but discoverable tools, and they've made them all available to you. And I've always loved, it's one of the things I like about the Galaxy Note, I've always loved the idea of a small, like, digital field notes or drawing book in my pocket. And Linea really delivers with that. It's good for artists. It's really good for notes.
Nice.
They're all a bunch of artists. So when you look at what Ged or what, you know, some of the other people there are doing, I'm going to blank on his name, Rob, who does all the Star Trek storyboards. He's been putting up some of his pictures doing on it. And he is just so good. So if you have any artistic tendencies and you want to take advantage of that gorgeous, ginormous, almost tiny tablet scale iPhone XS Max screen, Linea Go is an amazing app to do it with.
$299 in American dollars.
Yeah.
In the App Store.
I have such a strong recommendation to have a good art app on your phone because you can't draw a lick to save your life, but if you have that on your phone and you start to get in the habit of, like, while you're waiting for the bus or while you're on the train and your commute home, to just sketch, if you just get into the habit of, instead of doing Facebook or social media or whatever, if you use that to unwind, you'll be, 2 years later, you will have forgotten that you've gotten into this habit, and then you'll be able to see your first picture and then your most recent picture, and you're like, I'll be damned. All I had to do was draw for 20 minutes a day for 2 years, and now I'm kind of good.
Yeah.
I was surprised it had
just bought it.
I did too. In the time that you've done it, I bought it, opened it, and started drawing pictures. I was surprised at how good the pressure sensitivity is with the just with my finger. Like, I'm really getting, you know, I can really
have a lot of control. And the pencil tool is so good. I use the Judge Art apps by pencil tools a lot. It's just one of my things, and the pencil tool is really good.
It also has a zip line tool that helps you draw straight lines. I like that because I can't even draw a straight line. Nice. Good pick.
That's great.
Here is speaking of picks, a picture from the Surface event Mary Jo Foley taking of Paul Theriot and Brad Sams, and that is just unholy. I am so glad I'm missing this.
Showing a lot of leg there.
That's a lot of leg, boys. Apparently, both have a kind of a fascination with slip-ons and half socks. So,
wait a minute. Is Rubino not working? I'm just checking this crowd.
Let's see who's there.
I see Tom's guide.
I see Nilay Patel there.
Yeah.
Where is this? This is in, I think it's New York, right? Yeah.
I think so.
It's a small room. That's it. They're not streaming it, or we would be covering it, but they're not streaming it. So we'll just have to give you updates.
It looks like someone's living room.
It is. And I think that's what Microsoft is saying, by the way, according to Mary Jo Foley, is they want the tech to disappear. Uh-huh. It's a new vision. Microsoft is framing Surface Windows and Office Vision with modern life services. They want to.
Did they disappear Thoreau's pant legs too?
They disappeared his pant legs.
Hoping to repair
its tarnished image with consumers by trying to position its cross-platform apps and services, making them more productive. Actually, this is an older article, but this is just the next step in this with the new Surface. All right, we'll keep you covered. We'll keep you up to date. Alex Lindsay, pick of the week.
So it's coming out this month. I think I'm not sure if it's shipping yet, but this is Maxon, of course, is my favorite 3D app. And Maxon Cinema 4D is the thing that I use to put stuff together, and they've got great updates. One of the things I'm most excited about, and this I'm not going to get into all the inside baseball stuff, that's a little crazy, but node-based materials. Now, what that means is that you can basically build very, very complex materials that allow you to basically say, I'm going to take this attribute from this surface and then reconnect it. I've done a lot of node-based stuff, and so it's how you use the high-end compositors, and it's something that lets you build very complex texture maps that will really fill out just a lot of details that are very hard to do otherwise with layers. Standard layers mean I'm going to take this thing, I'm going to put it on top of this, and being able to randomly pull together, not randomly, but really have full control over how you pull these textures together. I'm going to take this part out of this and put it into here and combine these into another node. And so nodal compositing is something we've done for years, but nodal texture maps have been available, but not available on Cinema 4D. And so not available to me. So anyway, it is incredibly powerful. They've also, we do a lot of stuff where we import CAD drawings. So we actually oftentimes start with laser scans or LiDAR, which we talked about on Screensavers at one point.
Right.
Those become CAD drawings, and then trying to get them into Cinema to render them has been a little bit of a lift, and that's gone away. And then the other big thing that there's a lot of better rendering. Another thing that they've done really well, and again, these are things that I'm probably more interested in than anybody else, is the motion tracking has gotten a lot better. Now, I remember, I'm old enough, and I've been doing this long enough, to remember when motion tracking was something that was done by a person by hand. When I worked on Star Wars, that's what was done. People actually looked at the camera move and they tried to figure it all out.
Wow.
Then it was $10,000 a copy to have a piece of software do it for you that did pretty well. The idea that now it is easy to use and just sitting in your 3D app, and it'll do the match moving for you. It will let you do what's called screen reconstruction. So it takes all the points that it used to do the tracking to build a 3D model that you can have 3D stuff interact with. They had all that working, but it was a little bit of a lift to use it. And what they really spent a lot of time doing is making it a lot easier to use, which is something that Cinema 4D, basically if you're doing 3D, the reason that we use Cinema 4D a lot is because we can ramp new artists up. It's not that you can ramp new artists up very fast. And so if you're trying to learn something, it's worth downloading the demo, playing with it, doing some of the tutorials. There's the lynda.com stuff actually is really good. And there's a guy named EJ Hassenfrost who does a lot of great tutorials on how to use it. So anyway, that's my Cinema 4D worth checking out. It's always worth just downloading and playing with a demo, even if you don't know if you're going to do 3D, just because it's fun. It's 3D. It's easy.
Microsoft has unveiled the Surface Pro 6 in matte black quad core and the Surface Book 2 also in matte black. Mm. And now, Andy and I go from WGBH in Boston.
Yes, this is my pick is one of those is something that I was just announced today. So obviously I haven't tried it. It's new on Indiegogo, but it's a sequel to an interesting, but I think kind of not quite there writing tool. It's called the Traveler from the folks at FreeWrite. It is a word processor, meaning that it is a keyboard, it is a screen. And software for editing text. It has Wi-Fi, but all you can do with the Wi-Fi is automatically sync the stuff you've written to your Dropbox or Google Drive or whatever account. It has no web browser, not even a micro browser. I'm not even sure if it has spell check. But the idea of this is that it is optimized to be a writing word processor tool. To that end, it has a really nice, like 2 millimeter throw keyboard. It has a 2 to 4 weeks of battery life, they promise, because it uses e-ink displays instead of LCD or OLED. And I've used the predecessor to it. It's actually really, really cool to write on an e-ink display. It's like the display on your Kindle. It really does feel like you're just typing. What I like about this is that they seem to have learned a lot of lessons from the first one. The first one was kind of cute and kind of you feel as though as a prejudiced, bigoted person full of failures, my personal failures myself. This is a comment about me, not about people who bought the original one. I imagine that people who bought it spent more time talking about why they think this is the best way. You know, because I don't like Facebook. I don't need the Facebook. It was very, very ostentatious and showy. And it didn't have some features that I think were really, really good for writers to have. This one is, instead of being like a manual, the size and weight of like a compact manual typewriter, it really is like a keyboard and a screen that folds down on top of that keyboard. So it's even smaller than a laptop. It has extra editing features that make it it works more like a regular text editor than as something that aggressively doesn't want you to go back and edit things. It's easy to have multiple projects going at the same time. The whole idea of this is just that if you feel as though this is your jam, you know, if you feel as though $300 to $500 for a device that only does word processing, but it will allow you to never be stuck with a bad battery, never be stuck with a 0.5 millimeter key travel keyboard, never have any distractions. You can just go someplace and do it. It's an interesting idea. I haven't pre-ordered it yet. They actually made triple their $50,000 fundraising goal today, and they just started launch today. If you get in early, it's about $300. They say it's going to be $600 when they actually ship in June of 2019. I don't think I can see $600 for this, but for $300, for a professional writer or someone who's writing a novel or has a specific project that they want to keep separate mentally from the tools they use for all of their other computing that involves a keyboard, it's very, very interesting. It's at least worth looking at. I like, if nothing else, I love the story that's being told of, we made this one thing that was sort of niche and sort of out of our own heads, and this is the second version of that we built after the first one was successful enough to acquire a bunch of fans who were giving us feedback on what they liked, what they didn't like, and what they wanted to see in the next version. So, interesting.
Not out in time for NaNoWriMo, I'm sorry to say, but...
No. I lose chest hair out of nerves when there's like a crowdfunding campaign for something that is that involves building a piece of technology. But this company, they've already been through this show once. They've shipped the original FreeWriter and it worked just fine. So I don't have any doubt that you'll get it in 2019. Maybe not necessarily in June of 2019, because who knows what happens. But you're not going to be waiting 3 years later for your device to arrive.
Hmm. But yeah, well, interesting. I want to correct myself. It wasn't a Surface Book. It's a Surface Laptop 2 that Microsoft has announced. And thanks to Paul Thurrott, we do have some information about the matte black devices They will be available October 16th. Starting price for Surface Pro 6, $899. Starting price for Surface Laptop 2, which Microsoft says is twice as fast and has 14.5 hours of battery life, $999. 15:1 contrast ratio, too. So that might be a good... That actually might be a very good writing.
All you need is matte black. I mean, let's be honest now. Yeah. Once they said matte black, the rest is really irrelevant. Yeah.
I do think it is kind of amazing that the phone cost is past the tablet cost.
Yeah. You know, it's like, right.
I'm in that boat. I had budgeted money for. I haven't bought a new phone in 3 years. I bought a refurb Pixel phone. I think last summer or the summer before, and so I had set aside like $700 or $800 of my budget that I'm probably going to buy just to get whatever's new. And now I'm kind of more exciting about the tablets that might be coming out from Apple or Google. And I'm like, I'd much rather hold on. I still love this old phone. I'd much rather keep it for year three or year four and add a really cool Chrome tablet or add the latest version of the iPad Pro to my lineup I might even save some money on the deal because that's where phones are going these days.
Well, thank you everybody for being here. I think we should wrap this puppy up, leave something for next week. Renee Ritchie is at iMore.com up there in Montreal, home of the bagel.
And yes, sir.
You can read all his works, including his coverage of Pokemon Go, as well as his fabulous Vector podcast at iMore.com. What's coming up on Vector?
I've been trying to do a video a day. I haven't quite made it, but I'm working my way towards it. So I had I did a whole Beauty Gate thing. I got to talk to Sebastian and some other smart people and did a whole Beauty Gate video today.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Alex Lindsay, you find him at the Pixel Core. Easiest way to follow him is on the Twitter at AlexLindsay.
After a sabbatical, I started doing the teardowns again. So if you want to see me complain about other people's work.
A new teardown.
So the teardown is basically me looking at other people's work, oftentimes broadcast, and either giving you what's missing or also giving you some inside baseball about why they're doing what they're doing.
I love this.
And kind of the whole thought process. I mean, we've had an opportunity to do a lot of work with a lot of broadcasters, and obviously, you'll notice from the shows that I have a strong opinion about what works and doesn't work. So, I'm not making...
Give this man a telestrator and stand back.
Yeah,
you'll notice that a lot of these people here on CNN are white dudes.
And I don't get into the content.
It's not that.
I don't get into the content part of it. I just get into the
production.
What's
wrong with this shot?
Yeah, I was just talking about the fact that I don't like windows behind people, and you know,
especially
and,
John Kerry, because it emphasizes the inverse curvature of his jaw
and a white shirt in front of it. And then also, I got the buttons.
Actually, given the lighting problems, they've done a pretty good job with that shot.
I break down a lot of stuff. I'm kind of moving slowly towards using it as an educational resource as well, so I'm going to do more where I talk about
good
what would make better. I'm starting
Fantastic.
To mix in some other bits and pieces, so if you like that kind of thing, or you got five minutes to burn, there you go.
Andy Anatko, catch him at WGBH in Boston, public radio for Boston, and on his website ihnatko.com. Follow him on Flickr. Always great images. What did you post the image that you're going to be showing?
No, I'll probably post it after the gallery is hanged. I'm not saying that I just snapped this thing with an iPhone 10 and printed it out on a dot matrix printer. It did get a lot of Photoshop Google foo, but that's what you do when you. But that's what you do when you want to do like an arty sort of print. Yeah. It's never great. But yeah, I'll post it, and I'm hoping to write up the whole story because it teaches you a lot about what a phone camera can do and what you can do with the pictures that are taken with it.
Excellent. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday right after iOS Today, usually around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to join us in studio, email tickets at twit.tv. There's no cost. But we'll put a chair out for you. You got to be, of course, in the Petaluma, Northern California area. You can also watch the live stream anywhere in the world at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room, where people of a similar bent are watching at the same time. irc.twit.tv. I'm not saying the chat room's bent, or am I? If you can't watch live or be here live, you can always get on-demand versions, audio and video, of everything we do on the network at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/MBW.
Best thing to do would be subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it absolutely automatically the minute it's available. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now back to work, because break time is over. Bye-bye.